Hello everyone, welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, February 15th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone, glad to have you listening as always. Currently in Fort Dodge, it's a minus 15 degrees, looking for a high, if you want to call that today, of minus 5, expecting a low Monday night of a minus 25 degrees. And then hopefully by the end of the week, things will be warming up a little bit. And perhaps by next weekend, we might even be into the upper 20s or lower 30s. So we'll take a closer look at the extended forecast as we close our time together. In the meantime, we'll go ahead and look at today's messenger. Moving on up is the title of the first article, today's messenger. Webster County's largest food pantry has a new home, just up a flight of steps from its old home in the basement of the First United Methodist Church at 127 North 10th Street. It took over a year, but the major remodel of the main floor of the office building is now complete. "We are not handicap accessible," Lord's Cupboard Director Joni Ham Olson told the Messenger in December 2019. "We have a lot of volunteers and clients who cannot come down to the stairs. We want to remodel and make it handicap accessible." Since its founding in 1974, the Lord's Cupboard has always been located in some sort of basement. It started in what was essentially a closet in the basement of the church. Food pantry moved to its most recent home in 1987. Ham Olson said that in recent years it's become more and more clear that the basement location was not ideal for the food pantry. "It's been a topic of conversation for a number of years. The stairs were the big hurdle. It was a hurdle for our clients, and it was a hurdle for our volunteers." She said that the food pantry always tried to be accommodating to clients who couldn't come down the stairs. A volunteer would bring their food up to them, but that wasn't necessarily sustainable. Ham Olson said she explored putting in an elevator or a ramp system and even looked into moving to a whole new building altogether. Instead, the church decided to gift two-thirds of the main floor of the office building to the Lord's Cupboard. Once the leadership at First United Methodist approved a remodel plan for the main floor, Ham Olson got started on fundraising for the project, which was expected to cost $250,000. An anonymous donor eventually reached out through First Presbyterian Church, offering to match $100,000 in donations to the project. Over the next 3 months, Kalasha Construction worked on the remodel. COVID-19 did cause some delays in the project, Ham Olson said, but the remodel was finished earlier this month. Tuesday will be the first day the pantry will be open in its new location. The remodel included a new waiting area for clients, several storage closets, a large main pantry room, and handicap accessible bathrooms. On Friday, volunteers from local Girl Scout and Boy Scout troops helped move hundreds of pounds of food donations from the basement of the building to the main floor. To the new pantry. Lord's Cupboard serves about 300 households each month, Ham Olson said. Much of the food the pantry gives out comes from the Food Bank of Iowa. The pantry also relies on donations from local organizations and individuals and businesses. Target and Fairway typically donate food from their shelves each week, she said. The Lord's Cupboard also offers personal hygiene products and other household necessities like soap for its clients. "We're not a grocery store, we're a rescue pantry," she said. "We try and provide a lot of things, and we're a nonprofit, so everything that goes out of here was either donated or purchased with donated money." Lord's Cupboard will host a joint worship service on April 25th with several churches in Fort Dodge. Service will be outdoors near the food pantry site, and there will be an open house in the new space after the service. Students in the Arts recognizes the winter term students. That's the title of the next article in today's Messenger. As part of the Students in the Arts program, K through 12 students from Fort Dodge Public Schools, St. Edmund Catholic School, and Community Christian School have been recognized for excellence by their instructors for the winter term in the Performing and Visual Arts program. From St. Edmund Catholic School in Art, Hank Flattery, Haley McLaren, Brady Temple, Emily Otto, and Logan Hansen. And in Music, Gemma Goebbels, Kylie McGonigal, Michaela Tran, Dylan Eslick, and Julio Galvin. From Butler Elementary School, in art, Ava Anderson, Janessa Williams, Callie Bird, Brindley Wirtz, and Dillian Alcazar. In music, Carter Borkland, Jackson Pennington, Olivia Echeverra, Kelsey Klebstein, Peyton Gilbert. From Cooper Elementary, in art, Riley Ewing, Ileana Whittington, Brindley Schnell, Braylon Townsend, Kieran Johnson. In music, Ariel Wilhelmi, Abriella Lyon, Tommy Lennon, Priya Hinkinson, Avila, Adric Smith. From Phil Haver, Alessandra Cotta, Faith Mason, Olivia Archibald, Isaac Serwick, and Liam Kraft. And in music, Drew Vonsack, Lindley Larson, Everett Hill, Lila Hill, and Lucas Davis. At Duncombe Elementary School in art, Marley Chase, Lauren Parker, Francisco Chile, Chavez, Laxton, Shute, Lauren Schell. And music, Miles Bolton, Drake Brookshire, Catalina Vasquez, Allie Hudson, and Kyler Denman. From the Riverside Early Education Center, in art, Maisie Hayes, and in music, Harriet Price. Community Christian School in art, Lydia Hughes, and music, Raylin Becker Brady. Middle School Vocal Band Orchestra in art, and Community Christian School Band, Elijah Lawrence, and the vocal, Kaylee King. From St. Edmund in art, Kirsten Castro, Nora O'Connor, Jameson Baker, Jonah Carlson, Manuela Rodriguez. And band, Matthew Cremens, Alex Lighting, Manuela Rodriguez, Cecilia Galvin. In vocal, Betsy Groove, Lila Reed, Max Webster, Cooper Markson. Fort Dodge Middle School in art, Charlotte DeYoung, Sam Mosher, Gracie Harvey, and Serenity Brown. In band, Zoe Baum, Conrad Greathouse, Zane Rowe, Madeline Stefan. In orchestra, Bentley Jones, Breck Pingle, Zuri Rowe, and Brady Major. And in vocal, Hope Allstott, Braden Kammerer, and Madison Sullivan. In high school band, vocal, orchestra, art, and theater at St. Edmund's, vocal, Denny Ean, Kevin O'Connor, Grant Webster, Sydney Ingalls. In band, Claire Conrad, Maggie Strickland. In art, Sam Bowen, Emilian Garcia, Allison Nealand. In theater, Emma Davis, Sophie Fuller, Claire Conrad, Alex Tiernan. From Fort Dodge Senior High, Camden Doster, Chloe Justin, Michael Miller, Matthew Anderson. In band, Britta McCollum, Abby Meyer, McKenna Kammerer, Brando Sear. In orchestra, Logan Schweiger. In art, Jace Prather, Mason Richardson, Arlie Martinez, Madison Palmer. In theater, Sol Berkey, Lily Johnson, Logan Hamilton, and Josie Novosito. And that will be the Student of the Arts recognized for the winter terms from K through 12, Fort Dodge Public, St. Edmund, and Community Christian School. A Friday afternoon altercation ended with one man suffering a gunshot wound to his midsection, according to the Fort Dodge Police Department. At about 2:40 p.m., police were called to the 1100 block of 2nd Street Northwest for a report of shots fired. Once there, police determined a disturbance had taken place and at least one shot was possibly fired. When police arrived, all parties involved had left the area. Later, at about 3:15 p.m., a 21-year-old man arrived at Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center emergency room with a gunshot wound to the midsection. Police determined the man, who is not identified at this time, was involved in the altercation reported earlier. The man was treated at Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center before being airlifted to a Des Moines hospital in stable condition. Fort Dodge Police Department is continuing to investigate. Anyone who may have information is strongly encouraged to contact law enforcement immediately at 515-573-2323. Fort Dodge Police Department was assisted on scene by the Webster County Sheriff's Department. Kindergarten Roundup at Community Christian School will be February 25th. There will be two sessions available, one at 3:30 p.m. and one at 5:30 p.m. This is for students going into kindergarten next year. To register, call the school by February 18th. In alignment with the school's ongoing COVID-19 protocols, participants are asked to call ahead and select the session time, wear a mask, and adhere to social distancing instructions. CCS is also registering students for 3-year-old and free 4-year-old preschool for next year. Call the school at 515-573-3011 to reserve a spot, along with classes for preschool, elementary, and middle school students. Community Christian offers daycare and after-school programs to assist families with their child care for all ages. Escaping the Elements is the title of the next article. Beacon of Hope opens its doors to those out in the cold. With dangerously cold temperatures not going away just yet, people should want to avoid being outside for very long, according to Steve Rowe, executive director of the Beacon of Hope Men's Homeless Shelter. And to aid in keeping people warm, the Beacon has temporarily lifted any restrictions on allowing guests in the building due to the circumstances of the weather. With the circumstances right now, no matter what they are allowed in, Rose said. Let's try that again. With the circumstances right now, no matter what they are allowed in, Rose said. But even with the go-ahead, some people don't want to come in. Part of the problem we have is the intensity of the mental illness of the men that come to see us. For instance, we had a man come in. I sat and talked to him. His anxiety was extremely bad. He is on medication. His body was shaking. He has a history of mental health problems, bipolar, schizophrenic. Rose said the man had trouble eating because he was so anxious. I tried to calm him down. He made it through the night. For the first thing in the morning, he left. I said, no matter what, if he comes back, he does not need to meet with Eric Howard, our chaplain, and I. He can just come in. We are making sure no matter what time it is, we usually lock down at night. Whether someone leaves, and technically they would not be allowed back until we met with them, the circumstances right now, no matter what they are allowed in. Rose said the man struggling with anxiety ultimately did come back. With that being said, there's a number of guys who won't come in out of the cold because of their mental condition, and that's very concerning to us, Rose said. We are a warming center for people right now on the streets. There's nothing stopping them from being able to come in. We need to make sure they aren't going to freeze to death. Nobody will be turned away. In another instance, Rose said a man was out so long he suffered severe frostbite. That man is now scheduled to have surgery on one of his fingers. Sometimes men will arrive at the shelter in the middle of the night. We have informed the night shift if someone shows up, we need to let them in. Usually in the middle of the night, it's the police bringing them in. There was a guy who was unstable. He stayed one night and took off again. As far as I know, this guy is on the streets. I don't know how he's surviving. I know he's trying to hang out in the entrance of the Biltwell Apartments. He's another one we have been trying to keep. People need to realize there are some people who can't deal with it. They can't deal with being around a number of people. We do our best to try to make them comfortable. There is help. They can go to Berea Hill, Unity Point Health Mental Health Services. And in a mental crisis, they can go out there and they will help them. And if it's an emergency, so we try to encourage them to go out to Berry Hill to get the help they need. The combination of the weather, the COVID-19 pandemic, and mental health issues has been taxing on many people. It's just a very difficult time right now, Rose said. Aside from the Beacon, there seems to be a limited number of places in the community where people can go to get off the streets and find warmth. I'm not aware of who else is a warming center or who allows people to come in off the street. There may be. Sometimes churches will, but I don't know personally of any churches that are a warming center. There could be. I just don't know. Major Rick Hamlin of the Salvation Army said that the organization tries to keep tabs on their clients. What we have seen with our feeding program, there are people staying with others. I haven't noticed any homeless people out in the streets. A lot of the clients we serve are able to find shelter. Hamlin added, my caseworker often talks to the people, and she knows the ones who may not have a place. The pandemic has made it more of an issue for certain places to open their doors. With COVID, there's a lot of people limiting who comes in, he said. Absentee voting for special school elections for Manson Northwest Webster School District and Stratford School District elections on March 2nd are now open. The deadline to pre-register to vote for the special school election is 5 o'clock February 19th. This applies to registration in person, including registration at driver's license stations or agencies by mail. Voters may register online until 11:59 p.m. Exceptions, mailed registered forms postmarked on or before the worry-free postmark date are considered on time even if they are received after 5 o'clock p.m. After February 19th, a person may register to vote using the Election Day registration process at the courthouse at 701 Central Avenue, Auditor Office, 2nd Floor, Fort Dodge. Instructions are available on the Webster County website Auditors tab. The deadline to mail out an absentee ballot is 5 o'clock, February 19th. In-person absentee voting will continue at the courthouse at 701 Central Avenue, Auditor Office, 2nd Floor, Fort Dodge. This absentee precinct is open from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday until 4:30 p.m. on March 1st. If you have received an absentee ballot by mail and wish to return them in person, they can be returned to the Webster County Courthouse drop box located in the alley at 701 Central Avenue in Fort Dodge, or delivered in person to the 2nd Floor Auditor's Office at the courthouse. Please note there is ongoing construction. Looking at from our files going back to February 2006, there's a picture of workers leaving the Electrolux plant in Webster City after learning that the company was going to eliminate 700 jobs there, moving front loader washing machine production to a factory in Mexico. And that is from our files, February 15, 2006. Love That Lasts is the title of another article. Three Fort Dodge area couples have been married for over 65 years. It is often said that true love is hard to find. Here we share the stories of three Fort Dodge area couples who found love and haven't let it go. Each of these couples have been together for at least 65 years. It's been a lot of laughter for Bob and Donna Pearson throughout their 65 years of marriage. I will tell you what a lot of people have said when we tell them how long we've been married. They look at us both and say, "How in the world has she put up with you that long?" said Bob. "That's not true. He likes to say that," said Donna. "We can laugh. We've had to." Bob and Donna have lived in Fort Dodge for the majority of their life, but did not grow up in the area. We both grew up in the hills in northeast Iowa. I was born in rural Alamakee County in my grandparents' home. We lived on a farm before we moved to Postville. Donna said she is originally from Fayette and was teaching in Monona when she and Bob first met. The couple met at a basketball game when Bob was on leave from the service. I asked somebody I was sitting by who that gal was. They told me her name and I wrote her a letter. She made the mistake and answered it, he said. Bob had previously served in the Navy before enlisting in the Air Force in 1951. When he was discharged on February 5th, he came back home, and a few short weeks later, Bob and Donna had their first date. "We went to the movie Seven Brides for Seven Brothers," Donna said. The couple was married that July. "Everybody said it was a very short courtship. I was getting old," Bob said. "I'd been in the service twice." At the time, Bob said he was a barber and he had found a house for sale. "I bought it and we wanted to get moved in, so we got married and moved in." The newlyweds remained in that home until 1957 when they moved to Iowa City. Donna said she taught at Coralville and earned her degree at the University of Iowa, while Bob also attended the university utilizing his GI Bill, eventually earning a Bachelor of Arts in 59 and a Master's in 61. Soon thereafter, Bob was offered a position as the business education teacher at the Humboldt High School. They moved to Humboldt, where they remained for 6 years before moving to Fort Dodge. He then took a position at Iowa Central Community College, where he served as department chair in the office education department. Together, the couple has 2 children. Their daughter, Tracy Walk, is a pharmacist from Osage, and their son, Dr. Eric Pearson, is an oral surgeon in Fort Dodge. They also have 4 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. Education is very important to the Pearsons. They are honored. Both of their children and grandchildren all have degrees, and some with advanced degrees. "I am pretty darn proud because neither of my parents went to high school," said Bob. "It all started with us." Donna's background was different than Bob's in that aspect, as her father went to Iowa State and her mother was a nurse. Understanding that each other has come from different backgrounds has helped the Pearsons stand the test of time, and that is some advice Bob would like newlywed couples to understand. In a marriage, individuals come from different families, different backgrounds. It's just a different situation, and you have to realize that you're not the same, and you learn that she is an individual, and I am an individual. We have different likes and dislikes. But doggone it, you don't have to hassle about everything. You can't have everything your own way. It is a give-and-take situation. Together, the couple said they've always made it work. We've had our ups and downs, but mostly ups, said Donna. When things get tough, we just get tougher. It might get worse, but you make it better. My mother taught me that. Bob has some more advice to add. Try to marry someone like Donna. That would go along with what I would like to do more than what she would like to do, he said. Over the years, the couple has enjoyed traveling. We covered an awfully lot of the states. One summer, we spent 45 days in Europe with our children. We have broadened our vision of the world that way, and I am very grateful for that. It's been a good life since we got together. Garrett Wieland of Fort Dodge was in the audience during a school Thanksgiving program directed by his future wife, Leola, in the 1940s. The program took place at a country school in Madison Township within Butler County. At that time, Garrett spent many of his days farming with Leola's first cousin. Once done with the work, Garrett decided to watch the school program. We put on a Thanksgiving program, and he gave me a ride home from there, Leola recalled. The first thing I said to him was, I love to dance, and I'm going to teach you how to dance. The two practiced in that same country school. I taught him how to do a dance, Leola said. It was nice. The first movie they ever saw as a couple was June Bride, a romantic comedy released in 1948. They drove to a theater in Waverly to see it. The couple married in 1950, and they've done a lot of dancing since then. Eventually, Garrett became a trooper with the Iowa State Patrol. Leola taught for the Fort Dodge Public School System. They moved to Fort Dodge in 1957. We belonged to a dance club, she said. We went to the Larimar to dance. We had so many good friends. In the early years of their marriage, Leola was teaching on a limited elementary certificate. She eventually earned her teaching degree from Drake University during summer classes. He took care of the kids and did things at home. He worked hard, Leola said. Garrett, also a U.S. Navy veteran, joined the Iowa State Patrol after farming proved to be a difficult road to a steady income. We did farm for a few years. We lost so much money. Garrett said, I need to change jobs and do something different. Troopers from Parkersburg and Hampton said, we will help you out, and they did. That's how the couple landed in Fort Dodge, and once here, Garrett wanted to stay put. He liked it so well, he never tried to move. One time they said to him, well, wouldn't you like to be a sergeant and go to Davenport? And he said, no, my wife wouldn't get a job. We were just going to stay where we are. We liked Fort Dodge. There were always a lot of things to do. Garrett retired from the Iowa State Patrol after serving 28 years. Leola retired from Fort Dodge Community Schools after teaching 33 years. Our two children graduated from Fort Dodge High and had very good teachers and a very good education, Leola said. Garrett said whenever there was tension between him and Leola, he would go work in the garage. He always said if we had a great difference, he would go out to the garage and work a little while, and then we were fine, Leola said. Just forgot if we had any disagreement, and it was time to get ready and go to bed. He worked in the garage a lot. He didn't carry on differences very long. The couple has two grandchildren and three great-grandchildren. In recent times, the two have kept to themselves. He will be 93 in a month, and I'll be 91 in the 1st of June. Leola said, we have stayed in during this COVID. We don't want to catch that stuff. We wear masks wherever we go. He reads the newspaper with his machine. He sits close to the TV. Garrett said, Leola has been his everything. She's been a great, great wife, he said. In May, the two will celebrate their 71st anniversary. Rand and Mary Louise Peterson were small-town kids, he from Harlan, she from Carroll, that met their freshman year during orientation at the University of Iowa 75 years ago. However, their meeting was no accident. I knew him from a distance because he beat us. He was a good basketball player, Mary Louise said. I didn't like him that much. Rand recognized her last name. I knew the name Anberg, which was my maiden name because my brother played basketball against him, she said. He came and introduced himself, and I told him I knew who he was. Shortly after becoming acquainted, Rand asked Mary Louise out for a date. He asked me out for a Coke date. It was a safe date, you know. We went to the drugstore. That was our first date, Mary Louise Peterson said. After that, Rand and Mary Louise were practically inseparable, making for good company for one another, being two small-town kids at a big university. We come from similar cultures, small-town agricultural background, but yet large enough to have good high schools, good athletic programs, and other programs, so we had those good backgrounds when we got to the university, she said. The couple was married before the last semester of college. He knew he was going to be drafted, so we were married in between semesters of our senior year. That's why our anniversary is in the middle of winter, no May or June wedding here. That September, Rand and Mary Louise set off to Oklahoma, where Rand attended basic training, and Mary Louise worked for the Oklahoma Light and Power Company. Soon they were expecting their first daughter, and she was born just before Rand left for Korea. While he was stationed overseas, Mary Louise and their daughter moved back home to live with her parents. We kept both sets of grandparents happy. She was the only grandchild on both sides. They were all very supportive, she said. Rand wrote regularly, and Mary Louise kept all of his letters. Currently, the letters are now in the County Museum in Harlan. Although Rand being drafted shortly after their marriage was difficult, it has been smooth sailing for the couple over the last 70 years of their marriage. We haven't had too many struggles, said Mary Louise. We've had it pretty lucky. Following his time in the service, Rand started working at banks in Dallas Center, Perry, and then Harlan. The couple was very busy throughout their lifetime. Rand said he served on the Republican Central Committee for several years. A good friend of mine was chairman. His name was Bob Ray. Bob and I became good friends, and I was the chairman of all five of his campaigns. Rand also served as president of the Iowa Bankers Association and the Harlan City Council. Mary Louise served on the Board of Regents for 12 years, acting as president for nine. She was the only woman to ever be president and the longest president they ever had, said Rand. She has a dormitory named for her in Iowa City. Mary Louise also took advantage of several other volunteer opportunities. I have lots of opportunities, and I took advantage of them to learn all I can and to do all I can, she said. During those times, Rand and Mary Louise leaned upon each other to help one another and their family. The best thing to have happen to our children was that I disappeared and he got acquainted with them and they got acquainted with him. The mothers usually did the home and the fathers did the business, so we got well acquainted with our children. We just always got along, no problem, said Peterson. Rand's advice to younger couples is you ought to share. We never had secrets from each other. If we had disappointments, if we had joys, if we had concerns, we shared them, said Mary Louise. Turning over to breaking news from the Marshalltown Times-Republican, a man was fatally shot early Monday morning at a Marshalltown convenience store. Marshalltown police reported to the shooting at Casey's at 111 North 3rd Avenue at about 3 o'clock to find a man suffering from a gunshot wound. The man has died. Police are seeking a man seen leaving the area wearing a black hooded sweatshirt and black sweatpants. The suspect is possibly a Latino male with an accent and is described as being short in stature. No other information about the suspect is known at this time. Information about the victim is being withheld pending family notifications. Law enforcement continues to investigate the circumstances that led to this shooting. The Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation is assisting with this investigation. The Marshall County Sheriff's Office, Marshalltown Fire Department, and Unity Point Ambulance Service all responded to the initial 911 call for this incident. This is an active investigation. Law enforcement encourages community members to be alert for suspicious activity and to report concerns immediately by calling 911. Anyone with information about this crime should call the Marshalltown Police Department at 641-754-5725. You are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. And now we will look at today's obituary page. George Bartlett. George Bartlett, 66, of Fort Dodge, died Friday, February 12th at Union Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center in Fort Dodge. Services are 10 a.m. Saturday, February 20th at the Gunderson Funeral Chapel. Burial will follow at North Lawn Cemetery. Visitation is 4 to 7 Friday, February 19th at Gunderson Funeral Home in cremation services. George is survived by his son, Kyle and Jana Bartlett, and their children, Landon and Blake, daughter, Kayla and Tyler Habhab, and their children, Riley and Blair, daughter Stacy and Steve Wozniak, and their children Brianna, Alex, and Jonathan. George's three siblings, Ron and Kate Bartlett, Bonnie, James, and Greg Bartlett. George was preceded in death by his wife, Candy Johnston Bartlett, his father, Art Bartlett, his mother, L. Viola Groth Bartlett, and his sister, Connie Bartlett Meyer. George Edward Bartlett was born January 1st, 1955 in Sac City to his parents Arthur and L. Viola Groth Bartlett. George attended Sac City Community School and graduated in 1973. He attended 2 years at Buena Vista University in Storm Lake and then worked for Royal Industries Noble Division, where he was a parts foreman. George worked for many years in the auto financing industry. Most recently, he was the finance manager at Carl Chevrolet in Webster City. On November 17, 1978, he was united in marriage to Candace Jo Johnston in Elk Point, South Dakota. The couple first established their home in Sac City and then spent a short time in Carroll before moving to Fort Dodge in 1987. George loved the Chicago Bears and the Iowa Hawkeyes and watching sports. George always attended his grandchildren's activities and events and was their number one fan. The absolute most important thing in his life was his family, especially his grandchildren. Memorials may be left to the discretion of the family. Benjamin J. Bryant Sr. Benjamin J. Bryant Sr., 81, formerly of Fort Dodge, died Monday, February 1st, at his home, surrounded by his loving wife and four children, of complications from Alzheimer's. A celebration of his life will be held Saturday, May 15th, in Clarksville, Missouri. Ben was born October 16, 1939, at his home, at the family home in Clarksville, Missouri. He was the son of Benjamin Witten and Ruth Bryant. He graduated from Clopton High School in 1957. Ben spent many years in Clarksville, where he owned and operated Bryant Milling, Feed, and Supply. From there, he worked in the automobile business at Gentry Bryant Ford, and then he spent many years in the feed sale business. His feed career led him many places, but the last stop was in Cedar Rapids. After retiring and moving to Norwalk, Ben re-entered the realty business as a broker-owner of Associated Realty. He was a gentleman who never met a stranger. Ben had a way with people. That is why they called him Gentle Ben. Ben loved to play golf, fish, and spend time with his family. He is survived by his wife of 37 years, Diane, four children, Debbie and Mick Kindly, Dana and Jake Hansen, Ben and Kathy Bryant, Robert and Tina Bryant, two stepchildren, Angie and Matt Elliott, and Jamie Mahon, along with 12 grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his wife, 25 years, Janet Hoppy Bryant, and his parents, Witten and Ruth Bryant. Memorials in Ben's memory may be directed to the Alzheimer's Association, Unity Point Hospice of Des Moines, or the Animal Rescue League. Vernon Kowalki, from Sac City. Private family funeral services for Vernon Kowalki will be 1:30 Tuesday at Farber Ottoman Funeral Home in Sac City. A live stream of the service is available at the Farber Ottoman Funeral Home website. Jerique Bryson. Jerique Bryson, 24, of Fort Dodge, died unexpectedly Sunday, February 14th, at his home. Services are pending at Lopez Reiler Funeral Home. Rex Moore II. Rex Moore II, 67, of Fort Dodge, died Saturday, February 13th, at the Paul J. Baber Hospice Home. Services are pending at Lopez Reiler Funeral Home. Eugene Baker. Eugene Baker, 91, of Fort Dodge, died Saturday, February 13th, at Friendship Haven. Services are pending at Lopez Reiler Funeral Home. From Eagle Grove, Francis Wanken. Visitation for Francis Wanken will be 4 to 6 Wednesday, with rosary and vigil services beginning at 3:15 p.m. at Faust Funeral Home. Mass of the Christian Burial is at 2 o'clock Thursday at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. Faust Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. From Belmont, Sharon Bauer. Sharon R. Luftbauer, 82, of Belmont, died Sunday, February 14th at the Rehabilitation Center of Belmont. No services are planned at this time. Ewing Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Lucille Elms. Lucille Elms, 87, of Fort Dodge, died Sunday, February 14th at Trinity Regional Medical Center. Services are pending at Lopez Reiler Funeral Home. And that is the completion of today's obituary page. Quite a bit to share with you from the sports section. Headed to the Well is the title of the next article. From the time they were little kids, Drake Ayala, Drazon Phillips, Lane Cowell, and Cody Cook have spent a lot of time together on and off the mat. The senior foursome has earned a lot of points, of state points and 7 state medals through the first 3 years of their varsity careers, and in their final time in the Dodger Gym on Saturday, the quartet punched 4 tickets to Wells Fargo Arena. The group will be joined by 5 other teammates, as the 4th-ranked Dodgers will be 9 strong in Des Moines. I'm very proud of this group, said head coach Bobby Thompson. On paper, maybe we get 6 in, but they came out and exceeded expectations. They have bonded well together, and the community has surrounded them. I think everyone is a little spoiled by the standard senior high has established. A lot of schools only get 1 or 2 guys. We are bringing 8 or 9 or more every time. That's great for the program and this community. Freshman Drew Ayala at 106, sophomore Bishop Max Bishop 113 earned trips as district champions. Freshman Demarion Ross at 138, junior Ben Agley at 182, and senior Matt Searles Davis at 170 advanced as runners up. Ayala 28-1, Phillips 22-4, Crock Cook 23-3 were champions. Cal, 25-4, was a silver medalist. Drake has been impressive. We are watching history happen, Thompson said. He's been a true program captain and has scored a lot of points for us through the years. Drazon has always been determined. He's set high goals and has improved each time out at the state tournament. The senior quartet finished 9-1 on the day with 6 falls, a major decision, and 2 decisions between them. Cody wasn't varsity at first as a freshman, but has been a crucial component for us since he joined the lineup. He is a 2-time state qualifier and a medalist, and the best is yet to come. Ayala, who is ranked at number 1 in the nation as the top-rated wrestler at 126, bumped up to compete at 132 for the 2021 postseason. Ayala moved his career record to 164-3 with 2 falls on Saturday. He pinned Ankeny's Carter Davis in 1 minute 4 seconds of the finals. It was crazy walking off the mat knowing it was the last time I would wrestle in the Dodger Gym. This is the last chapter of my high school career, but I'm excited to be going again to state with my friends and family. We've been going together to state as a foursome since we were sophomores. I'm excited for them, and I know they are capable of big things. Phillips, ranked 3rd at 145, had 3 falls, all in the first period. He pinned Sioux City West Ethan Emick in 137 of the final. The 3-time state qualifier and defending state runner-up has 92 career victories. It's pretty fun, but it's also bittersweet, Phillips said. It's the last time I will wrestle in this gym. We seniors are like a train that gets going together and builds momentum. We feed off of each other. 5th-ranked Cook picked up 2 victories at 160, earning a 7-2 decision over Spencer's Calvin Tye for the championship to earn his 3rd trip to state. It feels good. It feels great to be going with 9 guys, Cook said. The seniors have been through a lot. We built trust and good friendship. Cal, who is sitting at 97 victories, lost a 7-2 decision to Ankeny's top-ranked Trevor Anderson. Cal, ranked 4th at 120, had a major decision in the semifinals and advanced by rule. Lane will see Anderson again in the semifinals, Thompson said. Lane has been a strong competitor for 4 years. Cal was 7th at the state tournament a year ago and 4th as a sophomore. We do really have a tight bond with each other, Cal said to the seniors. We've been wrestling with each other for a long time. Not only that, we're also best friends. They got my back 100% of the time, and I got their back 100% of the time, and they all know that. Bishop, 18-2, went 2-0, earning a decision over FNU Mihan of Ankeny in the finals. Bishop was a state qualifier a year ago for the Dodgers. It means a lot going to state again. I don't just want to go down there, though. I want to go in and win it. Drew Ayala, 25-4, earned a fall in the semifinals in the 19-7 major decision over Ben Hansen of Ankeny in the championship. It feels good to be going to state. I get to go with my brother in his final time in these seniors, which means a lot. Ross, 19-13, lost in the finals to Ankeny's Jace Anderson. Ross had a major decision to go along with a decision. He advanced by rule. Agley, 18-8, advanced by rule after losing to Ankeny's Cade Benetham. By fall in the finals, he picked up a decision in his first match. Drew was dominant at a stacked 106. Max has been wrestling all year and will be seeded high down at the state tournament. DeMarion has done a great job as a freshman. Ben has been learning in his first year on varsity and just has to clean up a few things. It's nice to see him get a shot at state. Senior Matt Searles Davis at 9-16, who has been wrestling for 2 years, put the Dodger faithful in a frenzy after winning his wrestleback match. Searles Davis earned the state berth with a 10-7 decision over Storm Lake's Eddie Tovar. Searles Davis lost in the finals to Ankeny's Nate Nessa by 4-0 count. "Going out there, I felt like I had nothing to lose," Searles Davis said. "This year I've been working out with Drazon especially, and he's helped me get better. It's just an amazing feeling like nothing I've ever felt before." Thompson was excited for the senior. Matt had 6 wins coming in and won 3 times on Saturday. He did a heck of a job and has worked to get better all year. Junior Prishon Mosley at 8-15, who is in his first year of wrestling, nearly reached the state tournament. Mosley lost 5-3, sudden victory match to Victor Bird of Sioux City East. Mosley fell to William Hendricks of Ankeny's in the finals. Senior Carter Forbes at 6-10, freshman Cal Hartman 15-16, sophomore Alex Reed at 15-16 placed 4th, sophomore Keaton Nichols 13-17 was 5th. "I'm proud of all these guys. They wrestled their hearts out. I'm disappointed for those who didn't make it. Prishon wrestled his heart out, and I know this meant a lot to him." Carter always did what we asked of him, which included bouncing around to other weights. "With the number one in his weight, Cal had to beat 6 other guys, so I'm proud of him as a freshman, especially having to move up to 152. Keaton and Alex got tough draws and had to fight through their brackets. I'm proud of those 5, even though they didn't make it." The Dodgers advanced 13 wrestlers into the semifinal rounds and had 10 finalists. Fort Dodge won the district title with 236.5 points, followed by Ankeny with 220. The Hawks advanced 10 wrestlers to state. Fort Dodge will begin the state tournament on Thursday at 1:30 inside Wells Fargo Arena. The Dodgers' next action will be Wednesday at 9 a.m. against North Scott in a state dual tournament quarterfinal in Des Moines. Heading back to the main page of the sports section, Southeast Valley's Aaron Graves hasn't spent a lot of time on the mat, but in his first season, he is headed to the state tournament. "It's an honor to go to state my first year," Graves said. "I feel very humbled to make it thanks to my workout partners and great coaches. Graves, at 285, who will play football for the University of Iowa, has been playing basketball in his high school year, and this year decided to join the wrestling team. The Jaguar lineman enters the state tournament as district champion with a 30-3 record. Graves won by injury default in the championship after pinning Algona's Logan Mindering in 107 of the finals. "Even though I wasn't able to go to many practices, I learned what it meant to work hard and focus when I had a lot going on." Sophomore Kalen Oaks at 113 punched his ticket as a runner-up. He topped Humboldt's Dylan Vaught in the semifinals by fall, but lost by fall in the championship. Oaks advanced by rule. Senior Harley Bryson at 182 finished 3rd. From Humboldt, 5th-ranked Jason Goodall at 126 will be making his return to the state tournament. The Wildcat sophomore at 31-2 earned a district championship on Saturday. Goodall earned a 9-0 major decision over 9th-ranked Kellen Moore of Forest City. He picked up 11-4 decision over Kalen Kirsten of Clarion Gofield Dalles in the semis. Sophomore Jaden Gargano at 27-8 was a runner-up at 106. He lost to 9th-ranked Jacob Zabka of Algona in the championship round. He advanced by rule with the win over Orosage's Darren Adams in the semifinals. Junior Dylan Vaught at 113, junior DJ Muir at 120, and sophomore Ty Gargano at 132 all finished 3rd. Top-ranked and defending state champion Cameron Fedesphone suffered his first loss of the season. At 113, he lost to 3rd-ranked Anders Kittleson Crestwood 2-1 in the championship match. The Webster City sophomore bounced back with a 17-1 tech ball over Roland Story's Ben Sarver. Fedesphone is now 116-6 in his career. Freshman Chase Rattenberg at 132 is a district champion. Rattenberg won by a technical fall over Crestwood's Cole Budakofer in the finals. 3rd-ranked freshman Carson Doolittle at 106 advanced as a runner-up. He lost to 4th-ranked Cade Bloom of Roland Story in the finals. Doolittle advanced by rule with a 5-1 win over 6th-rated Nathaniel Bilgock Bygock of Crestwood in the semifinals. Those wrestlers are from Webster City. CJ Hissler at 182 and Trey Shannon at 220 finished third for Webster City. Four Clarion Gofield Dallas wrestlers will enter Wells Fargo this weekend. Fifth-ranked Reed Abbas at 138, fourth-ranked Garrett Seba at 160, Kane Nelson at 220 earned district titles. Third-ranked senior Remington Hansen lost a 6-0 decision to Nick Fox of Osage, who he pinned in the sectional meet. Hansen bounced back with the fall over Emmitsburg's Sean Brennan in 1 minute 29. Four Emmitsburg wrestlers advanced to the state tournament. Junior Matthew Wirtz at 195 is a district champion. He is ranked 7th. Ryan Brennan at 138, Cade Shirk at 160, and Jordan Anderson at 220 were runners-up. And Algona, 9th-ranked sophomore Jacob Zabka will be a state participant for Algona. From Greene County, sophomore McKinley Robbins will be making his second trip to Des Moines. Bradley Stoffer won a 3-1 decision over Ballard's Gage Long for the district Gage Long at 138 pounds for the district championship. Sawyer Schlitz gave the Rams 3 titles with the fall over Cole Sanger of North Polk. Gavin Schurman lost in the championship but advanced by rule after a decision. Nathan Black and Brock Hammond were 3rd for Greene County. And that is some of the area wrestling. For the past 2 seasons, Ryan Duckett has experienced every emotion imaginable. On Saturday, the St. Edmund senior enjoyed the best feeling of all. Duckett, who had fought through 2 separate knee injuries and the loss of a coach, continued to push forward and achieve his ultimate goal, returning to the 1A state wrestling tournament. Also in the back of his mind was his former coach, Vinnie Harvey, who passed away. I knew Harvey was sitting in my corner throughout the match, Duckett said. I knew he would be proud that I got that fall in advance to state. I know he will also be with me down at state. Win or lose, I know I made him proud. On Saturday, all it took was 1 match, 1 pin, and everything Duckett endured had come full circle as he earned his second trip to state. I'm so blessed to be able to head back to the state tournament, Duckett said. When I got injured, my odds didn't look great, but I told myself that I was going to make it, and accomplishing that feels awesome. I knew that match was going to be huge and would ultimately decide how my career would end. Duckett, 16-5, entered the district meet as a runner-up after defeating sectional champion Tarek Rowe of Logan Magnolia. The Gale senior was the aggressor, recording 2 early takedowns and eventually pinning Rowe in a minute 22. I told him when he was warming up that he knows you're hurt, so you're going to have to take it to him, said St. Ed's coach Eugene Carlson. So he went out there and took care of business. Ryan took it to him and moved around well. He knew he had earned a state trip. Duckett injury defaulted in the championship against 10th-ranked Elliot Cooney at 40-5 in Nottoway Valley. He advanced by rule after Rowe won the 3rd-place match. There's no coaching on my part with Ryan. It's all his willpower, Carlson said. He has the competitive bones in his body, and he will push it as far as he possibly can. I had a number of coaches tell me on Saturday they wish they had 5 kids like him on their team. Duckett has appreciated having Carson in his corner. Coach Carlson has really given me the reins and helped me along the way when I needed it, Duckett said. He's had my best interests in mind throughout my career. We have grown closer as a coach and an athlete throughout my high school career. He's stuck with this program even when it's not so easy to do with the lack of numbers. As a junior a year ago, Duckett suffered an LCL sprain and a deep bone bruise. He did the same thing to the opposite leg this year, but was determined to fight through the pain. When I got the fall, I was instantly filled with emotions. I got up and pointed to my family, Duckett said. Getting the fall was like an exclamation point on the final step in completing my goal to go to state. I feel very accomplished, and overall, I just feel great. Going back to the main page of the sports section, the St. Edmund boys basketball team will open Class 1A tournament play on Monday as they travel to Britt to face West Hancock. Tip-off is set for 7 o'clock in the Substate 2 game. The Gales, 7-13, have lost 5 straight games all to Class 3A schools. Junior Hayden Mayer is leading the Gales at 11.3 points per game, followed by junior Quentin McCarville and sophomore Jackson Palmer. West Hancock at 11-11 has lost two straight but has won seven of their last nine contests. Sophomore Ryland Barnes is the Eagles' leading scorer. Junior Braden Walk follows up with 9 points per game. The Eagles have hit 106 three-pointers on the year and are averaging 49.4 points per game. So tomorrow, presumably, we will have a story to read about the outcome of that basketball game. Let's take a quick look at this date in history. On this date, February 15th, the USS Maine exploded in Cuba's Havana Harbor. A massive explosion of unknown origin sinks the battleship USS Maine, killing 260 of the fewer than 400 American crew members aboard. One of the first American battleships, the Maine weighed more than 6,000 tons and was built at a cost of more than $2 million. In 1965, the country of Canada adopted the maple leaf flag. In 1950, Disney's Cinderella opens in theaters. In 1980, Lillian Hellman sued Mary McCarthy. In 1950, USSR and the People's Republic of China signed a mutual defense treaty. On this date in 1961, the United States figure skating team was killed in a plane crash. On this date in 1998, Dale Earnhardt Sr. wins his first Daytona 500. Of course, this is the 20th anniversary of his death in the Daytona 500 race. In 1933, Franklin Delano Roosevelt escaped an assassination attempt in the city of Miami. And in 1942, during World War II, Singapore fell to the Japanese. And that's just a snapshot of some of the things that happened on this date in history. We'll go ahead and take a look next at the weather forecast for the coming week. Again, in Fort Dodge, as I read this, it's warmed up to minus 9. We're going to have a low Monday night of minus 25, so naturally Tuesday is going to start really cold. But we're looking at a high of 0 under sunny skies. Wednesday, a high of 10. Thursday, high of 13. Friday, high of 15. Mostly sunny skies throughout that time. Then clouds move in Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. High on Saturday of 20. Sunday, 27. On Monday, we'll have a high of 35. On Tuesday, a high of 34. And on Wednesday, a high of 33. We'll have minus 4 degree lows for the most part. And then when things start to warm up, we're going to see lows at night in the mid-teens to the low to mid-20s for evening lows. So, no precipitation in the forecast. That's always a good sign. Just cold temperatures for a couple more days, and then we'll start to see temperatures improving. It's going to bring us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger here on the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind, along with some assistance from an article in the Marshalltown Times Republican. Of course, this podcast and many others are available to you at iowaradioreading.org, and we encourage you to enjoy these podcasts made available to all you fine folks. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Thank you for sharing this time with me together. And we look forward to the next time when we're able to bring to you the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay warm, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Bye-bye for now.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. Shortly after modern humans arrived in Europe, the Neanderthals disappeared, and scientists think we had something to do with it. Neanderthals, or their direct ancestors, migrated out of Africa and into the Middle East and Europe around 250,000 years ago. Soon, they were well adapted to the environment. Large eyes helped them see in the longer nights and darker winters. Stout bodies helped them retain heat and handle large prey, and provided space for the large liver and kidneys needed for a diet heavy in protein. Their brains were as big as ours, but spent processing power on their greater visual and motor abilities. This may not have allowed them to develop higher communication or conceptual thinking to match ours, which may have been their downfall. Modern humans arrived on the scene 45,000 years ago, less physically adapted, but more mentally adaptable. We had cooperative hunting methods superior to the Neanderthals, allowing us to outcompete them for food, and perhaps reducing the large herbivore populations that they depended on. We also had superior tools and weapons. When there were conflicts between the groups, as there have been among tribes throughout history, our superior technology probably allowed us to prevail. But we weren't only fighting. There must have been considerable interbreeding, since we can find 1-3% of the Neanderthal genome in modern man. Which means the Neanderthals never completely disappeared. A little bit of them is alive in us today. I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.